celebrate the 88th year of the founding of AA in Akron, Ohio, with this 1988 version of Joe and Charlie, brought to you by the big book livingalive.com.
And Bill's story is the classic 12-step call. It is the classic case history of alcoholism, if you wish. And we can actually see what we've read about in the doctor's opinion in Bill's story. Now, a lot of people say, well, we can't identify with Bill, because after all, he was a New York City stockbroker and we were not. Or they say we can't identify with him because he was a night school lawyer and we were not. In our part of the country, we say we have a little difficulty because he's a Vermont Yankee and we were not, you know. But if we carefully look at and read Bill's story, I think we can probably find all the identification that we need in order to identify with another alcoholic. Let's briefly go through Bill's story and look for some points, especially identification points. We like to start on step two. On page two. On page two, Bill said, I took a night law course and obtained employment as investigator for a surety company. The drive for success was on. I'd proved to the world I was important. Well, I already identify with Bill Wilson. That's all I've been wanting to do all my life, is just prove to the rest of the world that I'm important also. Bill said, my work took me about Wall Street, and little by little I became interested in the market. Many people lost money, but some became very rich. Why not I? I studied economics and business as well as law. Potential alcoholic that I was, I nearly failed my law course. At one of the finals, I was too drunk to think or write. Though my drinking was not yet continuous, it disturbed my wife. We had long talks when I would still her forebodings by telling her that men of genius conceive their best projects when drunk. I have no problem identifying with Bill Wilson. In the middle of the page, he said, by the time I had completed the course, I knew the law was not for me. The inviting maelstrom of Wall Street had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. Out of this alloy of drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon and one day turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. Living modestly, my wife and I saved $1,000. It went into certain securities, then cheap and rather unpopular. I rightly imagined they would someday have a great rise. I failed to persuade my broker friends to send me out looking over factories and managements, but my wife and I decided to go anyway. I developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. And again, I can see Bill. He went to this night law course, completed the course, but the law was a rather a dull thing for him. And while going through the law course, he worked part-time on Wall Street. And he liked the excitement that went on Wall Street. He loved the speculation of the money. He loved the talking in big money and the working in big money. And it was a very exciting thing for him. And he decided, well, I'm not going to mess with the law. I'm going to make this Wall Street deal a full-time thing. Now, back in the 1920s, the stock market was on a roll, and almost everybody that messed with it made money. About all you had to do was invest some money in stocks, hold on to them a while. They'd go up in price, sell them, buy some more. And Bill began to develop a theory, though, in those days that this speculation might kill us someday. He began to say what we really need to do in order to invest our money wisely is investigate these companies and see what they're really worth. See if the stock is selling at a reasonable price in relation to the net worth of the company. See what kind of dividends they're paying. Look over the physical plant. Make our decisions based upon knowledge rather than speculation. And he said, what we really need to do is have somebody go out and investigate these companies. Now, being a good alcoholic, Bill didn't have any money, of course. But he told those that had money, he said, if you will back me, then I'll go out and do this job for you. I have no trouble identifying Bill Wilson. Spent all my life trying to talk other people into spending money the way I wanted them to spend it. And they said, no, Bill, we don't need that. We're making all the money we need. We just don't need that kind of information. Now, being a good, stubborn, bullheaded, hard-headed alcoholic, he said, well, to hell with them. My God, I'll just go anyhow. And he took the little bit of money he'd been able to save. He bought a motorcycle with a sidecar. He stuffed the sidecar with three huge volumes of a financial reference service. He and Lois get on the motorcycle, and away they go. Next paragraph says, we gave up our possessions and off we roared on a motorcycle. The sidecar stuffed with tent blankets, a change of clothes, and three huge volumes of a financial reference service. Our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. Perhaps they were right. I had had some success at speculation, so we had a little money. But we once worked on a farm for a month to avoid drawing on our small capital. Bill and Lois spent almost a complete year traveling the whole eastern part of the United States, looking over company after company after company. Finally, he comes back to New York City, and he's got reports on all these companies. He goes to the people that's got the money and said, "Now look, here's what I've been talking about." And they looked at that and they said, "Oh yeah, Bill, now we see what you mean." They said, "Sure, this is a great idea." They immediately put Bill on the payroll, gave him a large expense account, and at the bottom of paragraph 3, he said the exercise of an option brought in more money, leaving us with a profit of several thousand dollars for that year. Now, Bill came from a little bitty town up in Vermont. Bill was kind of an old poor boy. He has now become a self-made man. He made himself go through law school. He learned the business, the brokerage, stock business on his own. And all of a sudden, Bill's got a whole pot full of money. He said, "For the next few years, fortune through money and applause my way, I had arrived." Have no trouble identifying with Bill Wilson. He said, "My judgment and ideas were followed by many to the tune of paper millions. The great boom of the late 20s was seething and swelling. Drink was taking an important, exhilarating part in my life." Now, Bill doesn't know he's alcoholic. He just knows that he loves to drink. It makes him feel good. There was loud talk in the jazz places uptown. Everyone spending thousands and chattered in millions. Coffers could scoff and be damned. I made a host of fair-weather friends. My drinking assumed more serious proportions, continuing all day and almost every night. We see his disease beginning to progress now. Instead of having just fun with it, now he's beginning to drink most of the time. The remonstrances of my friends terminated in a row, and I became a lone wolf. The business people began to say, "Bill, you're drinking too much. Bill, you're costing us money. Bill, you're making mistakes when you're drinking. Bill, why don't you cut down? Bill, why don't you quit?" Now, like all of us, Bill finally said, "What the hell with him?" And he just withdrew into himself and became a lone wolf. There were many unhappy scenes in our sumptuous apartment. There had been no real infidelity, for loyalty to my wife, helped at times by extreme drunkenness, kept me out of those scrapes. I've always believed everything Bill Wilson wrote, but I'm not sure about that last statement. Lois, in some of her writings, has a little bit different view of that. Page 4. Abruptly, in October 1929, hell broke loose on the New York Stock Exchange. After one of those days of inferno, I wobbled from a hotel bar to a brokerage office. It was 8 o'clock, 5 hours after the market closed, the ticker still clattered. I was staring at an inch of the tape which bore the inscription XYZ32. It had been 52 that morning. I was finished, and so were many friends. The papers reported men jumping to death from the towers of high finance. Well, that disgusted me. I would not jump. I went back to the bar. My friends had dropped several million since 10 o'clock, so what? Tomorrow was another day, and as I drank, the old fierce determination to win came back. I don't have any trouble identifying with Bill. How many of us have come out of the hospital, the jailhouse, the divorce court, low, sad, depressed, feeling bad, stop in the bar, have two or three drinks, and as we drink, that old fierce determination to win comes back. We say, "By God, I'll show them. They're not going to do me that way." And away we go, and we're off and running again. Over on page 5, Bill's drinking continued. Finally, he became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. We see the progression of the disease. Just a page before, his ideas were followed by many to the tune of paper millions. People loved him. But now they don't even want him around. They're saying, "Bill, we'd rather you didn't mess around here." They begin to say, "Don't come in our place of business anymore. Why don't you go somewhere else?" He said, "Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. We're not drinking for fun now. We're beginning now to drink to live. Bathtub gin, 2 bottles a day, and often 3 got to be routine. Sometimes a small deal would net a few $100s, and I would pay my bills at the bars and delicatessens. This went on endlessly, and I began to waken very early in the morning, shaking violently. A tumbler full of gin, followed by half a dozen bottles of beer, would be required if I were to eat any breakfast. Nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. And there were periods of sobriety which renewed my wife's hope." Remember, Dr. Silkworth told us last night that we really cannot differentiate the true from the false. To us, what we're doing is absolutely normal. Now, you and I can see Bill's life going to hell in a handbasket already, but Bill can't see that. He says, "I still thought I could control the situation." But gradually, things got worse. And if you're practicing alky, that's going to happen every time, you know. The house was taken over by the mortgage holder. My mother-in-law died. My wife and father-in-law became ill. Then I got a promising business opportunity. Stocks were at the low point of 1932, and I had somehow formed a group to buy. I was to share generously in the profits. Then I went on a prodigious bender, and that chance vanished. And this is a story within itself. You know, Bill had put together another one of his deals. He had gone to the people that had the money, and he showed them how they could make a profit of several thousands of dollars. And they said, okay, Bill, we'll back you. But we're going to back you on one condition only. You don't drink. If you drink, the whole thing's off. Bill said, oh, God, don't worry about that. I'm through forever. Now, one night just before the deal was to be closed, they were all in a hotel room. They passed around a bottle of Applejack, and it went by Bill, and Bill said, no, thank you, I'm not drinking. Second time around, it came by Bill, and Bill's mind said to himself, well, one drink of Applejack wouldn't hurt anybody. And Bill took a drink, triggered the allergy, couldn't stop drinking, and blew the whole deal. Now, the importance in that is this. The next paragraph says, I woke up. This had to be stopped. For the first time, Bill could see what alcohol was doing to him. For the first time, he could see the truth. Now, Bill had an extreme amount of willpower. Most alcoholics do. You know, people tell us that one of our problems is we don't have enough willpower. I don't believe that. I think our problem is we got too much willpower. You know, weak-willed people do not become alcoholic. The third time they vomit, weak-willed people quit drinking. You know? But an alcoholic says, hell, there's got to be some way you can drink without puking. And we continue to try until we damn near kill ourselves. And Bill knew that now that he intended to stop drinking, that he'd be able to do that. He put his willpower to it. He said, I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I'd written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. But the next paragraph says, shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I'd taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed there being just that. You know, Bill thought with willpower he could quit, but he ends up getting drunk, and he said, well, hell, I must be crazy as hell. Page 6. Last paragraph. The mind and body are marvelous mechanisms, for mine endured this agony 2 more years. Sometimes I stole from my wife's slender purse when a morning terror and madness were on me. Again, I swayed dizzily before an open window or the medicine cabinet where there was poison, cursing myself for a weakling. There were flights from city to country and back as my wife and I sought escape. Then came the night when the physical and mental torture was so hellish I feared I would burst through my window, sash and all. Somehow I managed to drag my mattress to a lower floor lest I suddenly leap. A doctor came with a heavy sedative. Next day found me drinking both gin and sedative, and this combination soon landed me on the rocks. You know, we act today like dual addiction is something brand new in AA. No, Bill had a problem with this a long time ago. So did Dr. Bob, and so did some other people among the first 100. He said, people feared for my sanity, so did I. I could eat little or nothing when drinking, and I was 40 pounds underweight. We now begin to see the last of his alcoholism. He's dying from malnutrition. He can hardly eat anything at all. He can't work. About all he can do is drink, pass out, drink, pass out. This guy's going to die within a short period of time unless something happens in his life pretty fast, Joe.
My brother-in-law is a physician, this Dr. Leonard Strong, and through that and the kindness of that of my mother, I was placed in a nationally known hospital for the mental and physical rehabilitation of alcoholics. And Bill was placed in the town's hospital in New York. On the so-called belladonna treatment, my brain cleared. Hydrotherapy and mild exercise helped much. But best of all, I met a con doctor who explained that though certainly selfish and foolish, I had been seriously ill bodily and mentally.
Now, this is the summer of 1933 when Bill met Dr. Silkworth for the first time.
And Dr. Silkworth explained to Bill then that at this time he had been working on this little idea since 1930 himself about his idea of what alcoholism was. And he shared this with Bill on his first visit to the towns in 1933. Now, this helped Bill. He said, it relieved me somewhat. See, Bill was having trouble with willpower. He was trying willpower and failing at this time. He said, it relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it often remains strong in other respects. He said, my incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Now, this explained why he hadn't been able to use willpower. He said, understanding myself now, I fared forth in our hopes. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. You know, that means that's slang. He was doing pretty good. Young people might know that, but the goose hung high, it means he's doing pretty good. He said, I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer to self-knowledge. But it was not.
If you enjoyed this episode of Joe and Charlie from Akron in 1988 and would like to hear other versions, different seminars from different years, please visit our website, BigBookLivingLive.com.